right, so we're going to be...
Okay, let's get started. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Kauai Chamber of Commerce Lieutenant Governor's Candidate Forum. We are being broadcast live tonight by KKCR, Kauai Community Radio, and we'll be rebroadcast. Our sponsors for tonight's event are Family and Friends of Agriculture, Outrigger Kihuna Plantation, HTLA Kauai Chapter, PAC Build, the Kauai Board of Realtors, Kong Radio, the Kauai Filipino Chamber of Commerce, KKCR, Kauai Community Radio, the YMCA of Kauai, and Hu'ike Community Television. I'd like to welcome our candidates tonight, for the Democratic Party running for Lieutenant Governor, and we have to my left, your right, Bernard Carvalho Jr., Josh Green, Will Espero, and Kim Koko Iwamoto. Prior to starting tonight's event, we sat with the candidates, and they are in the order that they will reply to the questions. We've gone over how our timekeeping will be. Each candidate will have 3 minutes to introduce themselves, 3 minutes for each question that we ask, and then at the end, 3 minutes to give some closing remarks. Okay, without further ado, let's get started. We have a lot to cover. The first question tonight, which we'll ask, will be the only question that all of the candidates will ask, answer the same. Oh, I'm sorry. We have opening statements first. I'm jumping ahead on my schedule here. We're going to start with our opening statements. We will start with Mr. Bernard Carvalho Jr. Okay. You have 3 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. Good evening and aloha.
Aloha.
As always, happy to be with all of you this evening to share my story as I'm seeking the office of Lieutenant Governor for the state of Hawaii. Very proud to be serving as Mayor of Kauai and Niihau for the past 10 years and gained a lot of experience, of course, administrative experience with a neighbor island perspective, taking it to the bigger picture. Everything we do here on Kauai sets a footprint for the bigger picture, and we'll talk about that later. But very proud to be a husband for 33 years, a proud papa, of course, a husband, a father, and a papa, two grandchildren, and very happy for that. But as mayor and as a leader, it's all about building relationships. It's all about being able to go to Washington, D.C., or to the state, or to the county, within community, and, of course, the people. And so having that ability to reach out and hear the voice of the people and enfold what I hear into the decisions that we make is very important to me as a leader. And having the opportunity, I said, to serve 10 years as mayor, but prior to that, 17 years in civil service, 6 years as a department head, and then 10 years as mayor. So I've been consistent in my path and want to continue to serve at the next level. And speaking to my wife and our family, the next step is the Lieutenant Governor for the state of Hawaii. And so I look forward to being that connection, that bridge, looking at being the voice of the people, being able to reach out and connect and add value to the Lieutenant Governor's office. And that's where I stand right now. Look forward to finishing strong as your mayor of this beautiful island of Kauai, Niihau, but serving this entire state, and look forward to doing that with that experience that I have and the ability to really connect and reach out to people. So mahalo to the chamber and all of you here this evening, and thank you so much for the opportunity to share our story as we continue to seek this wonderful office to serve the state. Aloha.
Thank you. Mr. Green, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. Aloha, everyone. Aloha and mahalo for bringing us all together. I want to say it's a privilege and a pleasure to come from Big Island to be with you. And I want to say to all those who are listening, thank you so much for being interested in democracy and for sharing a couple hours with us. I think you're going to find I have a very different story than most politicians, and I look forward to getting to know you tonight. I came to Hawaii many years ago with the National Health Corps. I'm a physician first. People have gotten to know me in that role. You probably see me walking around Hawaii in scrubs. I came to Hawaii because we didn't have enough doctors, and I was asked to serve in Kau on the Big Island, which was an extraordinary experience. And in those first 4 years, I was able to see the suffering that was going on in rural areas and the challenges that people had. I came with a very fresh perspective right out of my residency, and I immediately saw people suffering with drug addiction, people suffering to find a good physician, families having a hard time staying together because of the economic challenges in our state. And then something very extraordinary happened. While I was being an emergency room doctor, which is what I am, in Pahala, the very place right now that's struggling very greatly with the effects of the volcano, two children came to our ER, terrible tragedies. One because this little boy had been neglected by young parents who were on drugs, and he fell from a second floor lanai and passed away in our ER. And a second who we were able to rescue after he had been run over by a car at his grandpa's place, again, when people weren't able to pay attention to him. And in the ER as the doc, we were able to save that child, mostly because of the heroic efforts of the nurses that were with us. But at that moment, I knew that I wanted to do more. I'm still a doctor full-time. I still go back to the Big Island every weekend to practice and be the doctor for the community. But those experiences informed me about some of the greatest struggles that we have. And then I decided to run for public office. I didn't expect to win. I expected to make a point about our need to face the bigger problems that people in rural communities have. But over time, I succeeded because I have this perspective, and I think it's a very real perspective, about what we really face as people in Hawaii, whether it's the neighbor islands or on Oahu. So when someone can't afford medicines, I know to pass a bill to expand Medicaid. When we don't have adequate drug treatment, we expand those services. We didn't insure all of our keiki, I passed that bill. So that's how I approach all of what I do. It's not all about healthcare, but it's about people. And being a physician has helped me to be an informed candidate and politician. I will be taking up those issues as Lieutenant Governor if you choose me, and I'm really, again, honored to be with you tonight to learn what matters most to you. So thank you for including me tonight.
Thank you. Mr. Sparrow, you have 3 minutes.
Aloha. Good afternoon to all of you, and thank you for coming out and joining us to learn more about the candidates. A little footnote, I'm the oldest. Thank you. Little footnote, I'm the oldest person on this stage, just to let you know that. With age comes wisdom, right? And as a matter of fact, I'll be 58 on General Election Day, November 6th. But let me share about myself. My parents are from the Philippines. I was born in Yokosuka, Japan. Thanks to the U.S. Navy, in 1954, my father was selected to join the Navy. Back then, it was like winning the lottery for someone in the Philippines, as you can imagine. And I spent my first birthday on the ship from Japan to San Francisco. And I've lived on the mainland in Europe, Cuba, for the first 22 years of my life. I came here in 1982 after finishing school at Seattle University with a degree in business management. And I love Hawaii. I am so honored and privileged to live here, to be elected to the state legislature. And this is truly my home. I have established my roots. There's no other place I'd want to be. One of the main reasons why I'm running for lieutenant governor. Now, I've served the longest in the Hawaii legislature of anyone on this table, 19 years. And I've had leadership positions, vice president, majority floor leader, and two very important committees, Committee on Housing and Public Safety, Intergovernmental and Military Affairs. In those 19 years, I have the most bills of anyone on this table introduced and passed, 99 bills introduced and passed. And these are measures that have been I've been at the forefront, advocating for, pushing for. An example, juvenile justice reform, police reform, prison reform, gun control, homelessness, affordable housing. I was a key architect on the medical cannabis program, hemp, building an aerospace industry, culture and arts. These are issues I've been active in, and you can see I know how to pass legislation. Working with my colleagues, I am able to get things done. And this is what we need in the fifth floor. We need a lieutenant governor who's active and who's involved, who's vocal and who speaks out, who will hold government accountable. My track record shows that. And I want to redefine and reinvent the position of lieutenant governor, because many people have asked me, what does lieutenant governor do? And I can promise you I will be the most active, involved lieutenant governor this state has ever seen. And my red flag is up, so thank you for listening.
Thank you. Ms. Iwamoto, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for inviting us this evening and allowing us to share stories with you. My background is I was born here in Kauai in Wilcox Hospital. My mother went into labor at the Coco Palms Hotel, which is how I got the name Coco. Mrs. Gassandra asked my mother to name me after her prestigious hotel at the time. My father's family is from Kauai, and they started Robert's Hawaii Tours. And I learned a lot about my work ethic came from both my father's side and his family company. He remembers washing car, getting the family taxi. It was a taxi company then, and then it turned into a rental car company, renting out aunties and uncles' cars, and then it turned into a tour company when they got a station wagon. And then ultimately buses, and they expanded across the state. And on my mother's side, she grew up as farmers in California, so she had the Japanese internment experience. So when she was 5 years old, she spent 3 years of her life in a prison, basically. But I learned early on, I learned about my work ethic then. I was 10 years old when I had a paper route. Does anybody remember the Star Bulletin? So we delivered these papers after school on a bicycle at the steep hill. And then when I was 14, I started working for the company, and I was there on the first day that Robert's Overnighters went on the market. I don't know if anybody remembers those packages. But it was really an exciting time, and I worked every weekend, every holiday. I worked throughout high school. But my dream throughout high school was to go to New York City and become a fashion designer. I made it to New York City, and I was working in the job of my dreams, and suddenly my employer called me into her office and said, we got a call last, she got a call in, at home for one of our largest corporate clients, and they basically told her that they weren't comfortable working with me because I was trans. And it was at that moment that I said, that doesn't sound right. And it was in the early 1990s, and the laws were, in fact, there to protect employers, to allow them to discriminate against me or people like me. And it was then that I made a realization that I would need to go to law school, understand how laws are made, and then to change them to make sure that we all have the ability to work with dignity and to earn a living and to provide for our families. So I did that. I went to law school, and I came back home to Hawaii. My mother had a stroke, so I wanted to be closer to her and take care of her. Eventually, I became a public interest attorney, and I actually coordinated legal clinics across the state, both in homeless shelters and in community centers, much like the legal clinic I went to seek help when I was in need. And then from there, I got elected to the Board of Education. I was appointed to the Civil Rights Commission. I'm a business owner, and my flag's out. But I'll continue the story later.
Thank you. The lieutenant governor serves as the assistant chief executive for the state, acting as governor upon the absence of the governor from the state. In Hawaii, the lieutenant governor also serves as legally as the secretary of state, and the designation requires the office of the lieutenant governor to act on several different responsibilities, specifically ordering and granting legal name changes, certifying documents for recognition abroad, processing documents to convey lands interdepartmentally, and serving as a repository for documents that will be available for public viewing. So while the overall responsibilities of the lieutenant governor are open for interpretation, the seat holds influence for the state in the executive branch, and the office is traditionally a stepping stone for the governorship or some other high office. So in recent history, we've had George Ariyoshi as lieutenant governor, John Waihe'e was the lieutenant governor, Ben Cayetano, Maisie Hirono, and Brian Schatz. So tonight, as we ask our questions, They are all relevant. We ask that each candidate please answer each question to the best of their ability, with all of those things in mind, being that there is a potential for being the chief executive for the state of Hawaii, and also that there is a potential for higher office beyond that. Okay, our first question tonight, which is the only question that will be the same for each of the candidates, and that is, if elected, what would you see as your primary role as Lieutenant Governor? Mr. Cavaglio, you have 3 minutes.
Well, first of all, having to be ready to step in as governor. I mean, that's the first order of business as far as I know and I understand. Of course, and secondly, being able to take that office and be able to reach out to the people, like I said earlier. There's so many issues happening throughout our state, major issues from transportation, climate change, education issues, just in general. But having to be able to reach out, having the ability to connect to people, having the experience to go abroad, from, like I said, the national level and the county level and the state level, and being able to take the voice of the people and turn everything into action. That's my leadership style. I've done many things. We have done many things here on Kauai, like I said, that has set the footprint of a bigger picture. And I believe that leadership style is needed now. And I can bring that to the table. We've been able to reach out, rather seeking different types of grant opportunities, looking at how we manage ourselves during disasters is another big one for Kauai. I've gone through several disasters. I understand what it takes. And I believe the Lieutenant Governor's office needs to understand that, needs to be able to reach out to the people, understand the resources that are needed during times of need, especially disaster situations. I have that experience. And on the flip side, the cultural connection that is needed in everything that we do is important to me. We come from the state of Hawaii. We need to practice. We need to live the aloha. And so the decisions that we make of today has to be tied to the past so our future can flourish. Hence our Kauai Nui Kūpapa program, which really encompasses honoring the land and the water, understanding the layout of our aina, and then incorporating the decisions we make of the future. I think looking that globally, which ties into everything else we're going to be talking about tonight. So for me, again, as mayor of this county of Kauai for 10 years, nobody at this table can tell me they've managed an island, managed people, managed government, managed business, being able to respond, understanding how and when to be ready, and understand where the resources are and how to attract the funding and the grant opportunities, whether it be housing and transportation and education, all of it. And I understand that because I've developed a solid understanding and a solid relationship with the broader community. And I look forward to being the next Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you.
Red flag.
Mr. Green, if elected, what do you see as your primary role as Lieutenant Governor? You have 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. So the primary role of a Lieutenant Governor is to serve the people of Hawaii, not to serve the governor, although I will be standing by his or her side at all times, in times of crisis like we're having on Big Island right now with the volcano, like the mayor did very eloquently when he was helping all the people here through the crisis in Kauai. I'm a person of action. Though the role is secondary to the governor, I never wait. When we didn't have health care on the Big Island, I formed a community health center. It now employs 160 people and takes care of 20,000 individuals that don't have health care. I will take ownership of the homeless crisis, as I've already begun to do on the state level. When I saw that we weren't making inroads on homelessness, I started a free clinic in Chinatown, which now saves the state over $105,000 every week because we provide direct care, wound care, mental health care to individuals that are homeless. It's part of a real solution. It's not part of cliches. It's not part of studies or plans or work groups. That's not how I operate. I get right in there because I live with people. I live in the emergency department. I live in the community with people, and I see what their greatest challenges are. So taking ownership of the homeless problem, which when you look at it is also an economic problem for our whole state, is critical. You don't want a lieutenant governor to wait idly by while the governor has to take on any number of other large issues. Another crisis for us is the opioid epidemic, which I'm very familiar with because I've seen the prescriptions devastate families. I know how serious it is here on Kauai. I know how serious it is on the Big Island and across our state. I'm the only person with these kind of experiences that can actually bring, I would say, a breath of professional ability to solve some of these problems. Now, all of my opponents are really terrific in this state, in the state race. But actually, to be able to work on those issues that affect all of our families, to be able to take on crises from day one, to be able to get real results, whether it's from the private sector and public sector. I raised $13 million to start a new homeless institute on Oahu. These are the kind of things that really set me significantly apart. Again, not better than any of my opponents in the race, but different. Able to actually take on the challenges that we in Hawaii have, and we have just too many to wait and not use lieutenant governor position very forcefully during its first 4 years or 8 years. I don't have aspirations to go and jump into higher office or to become the senator. I like the idea of being the physician lieutenant governor because I actually know what the problems our families are facing are. I have two children of my own. I look at them every day, and I shudder to imagine if we couldn't get them mental health care if they had need or treatment from drug addiction if, God forbid, they had that need. And I know so many thousands of families haven't taken care of 20 or 30,000 individuals in our state in the last 18 years that I've been a doctor here. I know what those challenges are, and I do think that that's how I will approach becoming lieutenant governor if I can get your support. So, again, thank you for having me in Kauai today.
Thank you. Mr. Espero, if elected, what do you see as your primary role as lieutenant governor?
My primary role as lieutenant governor will be to work side by side with the governor and to listen to the people. He can stay at the state capitol. I want to be a traveling lieutenant governor that will be active on all of the islands, especially the neighbor islands, because more work and more emphasis needs to be done for the neighbor islands. And I will make certain that the governor's positions and what he wants or she wants to do are completed and taken care of. But at the same time, I have so many issues and ideas myself. For example, I'm currently the Senate, or I was the Senate Housing Chairman. And this year was an exceptional, outstanding year for housing. We funded HB 2748, which appropriates $570 million for affordable housing. And we passed Senate Bill 2401, which appropriated $32 million for homelessness. And with this experience, I want to be the point man to end homelessness and build affordable housing for the state of Hawaii. I have a plan that we could end homelessness within 4 to 5 years and build enough housing within 10 years to fill the inventory which is needed. Because if there's one area that government has an impact on, it's housing. And housing is driving the cost of living for all of our residents so much. So many of them are living paycheck to paycheck. They're struggling. They have one and a half, two jobs. If there's anything that government can do, it's housing, because we control where it's built, when it's built, and how it's built. That's all government. So if we go on an aggressive agenda to build affordable rentals and housing, we can drive down the cost of living. I also introduced the bill last session that would allow the governor to appoint the lieutenant governor to be a member of the Board of Education. And I think that would be a fabulous place to have the number two person in the state working for all of our keiki and for our public schools. So as I said, I will be the activist involved lieutenant governor. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Ms. Iwamoto, if elected, what do you see as your primary role as lieutenant governor? You have 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you. So my primary goal would be to open the doors of the lieutenant governor's office and to make sure that it becomes an office of the people. The lieutenant governor's office is the same exact size as the governor's office. It's just on the Eva wing of the square building. It has, you know, immense real estate resource, but also staffing and an opportunity for the people who've been working on the front lines of the various issues affecting our state to give them that access to build their coalitions and coalesce their power. For instance, I've been working on the homelessness issue, as I mentioned, as a public interest attorney. I was conducting legal clinics in homeless shelters. I became a certified therapeutic foster parent, and many of my teenagers who I opened my heart and my home to were previously homeless, and some of them were previously incarcerated as well. And some of them as adults today, they are still struggling with, some of them are struggling with addiction and homelessness, and dependency issues and mental health, some mental health issues as well. And then today I also have an apartment building in the urban core of Honolulu that I purchased in 2004. Within a year of renovating that building, I was approached by a realtor who said that they had a client who wanted to offer me double the amount of money that I paid for it. Within a year, I'm like, wow, you can... 100% return on my investment in a year, that's ridiculous. But it was that time when real estate market was going up. But I thought about my tenants, and I thought about how just to pay my mortgage, what rents they were paying, and let alone if they had to now help a new owner pay their mortgage that was double the amount, their rents would all double. And I didn't think that would be possible. I'm trying to keep the rents down, because and it made me realize in that moment that I could either be part of the problem or part of the solution. If I sold it and I captured all that profit, it would leave all of those individuals, probably they couldn't afford it. Actually, I know they couldn't afford it, and they would be finding themselves in desperate need. But I decided to hold on to the building and to invest in my community. And I think that kind of consciousness and mindfulness and understanding, and I have to share with you that it is my most profitable investment today. After 14 years, it continues to generate revenue and profit, but it's also has an incredible social impact. Right now, more than 50% of the units are specifically committed to previously homeless families or families who would be homeless but for their Section 8 subsidy. So basically, I've been, you know, working the community, trying to do the work. So when I say open up the Lieutenant Governor's office to the people, I really mean the people that I've been working with on issues of housing, homelessness, environment, bail reform. Thank you so much.
Thank you. For the following questions, I'll ask a different question to each of the candidates. We'll start again with Mr. Cavaglio. Our first question has to do with the transient accommodations tax. In 1990, Act 185 recognized the burden that the counties carried in regard to tourism, and at that time the legislature deemed a fair allocation was 95% of the TAT revenues for the counties. Since that time, various caps have been placed on each of the counties' revenue share of the tax, while at the same time the cost of the burden has continued to rise. Mr. Cavaglio, your question is, do you support the removal of the current cap on the TAT to provide more funding to the counties?
Yes. And this is why. It's very important. And we've advocated as mayors overall, but for me personally, I mean, we want our visitors to come. We invite them to come and enjoy our islands, our state. But at the same time, we need to take care of our infrastructure. We need to take care of our land. We need to take care of just our opportunity here, you know, for people to visit. And that's has been such a big area of concern for all of us. And we've been working collectively to support every which way to remove the cap, of course, and assure that we have the revenues coming into this county, into our state, so we can continue to maintain and manage our land, manage our infrastructure. Working closely with our economic development office and, of course, all our Sukanoho and, of course, our Kauai Visitors Bureau, all of us collectively have pulled together to continue to look at ways to work closely and go to the legislature and assure that we have the means to assure that we get that funding coming. In being creative, we have to also look at other kinds of opportunities and taxes, you know, from road repair and infrastructure and all of that too. And so we were able to secure the GET tax that Hawaii County had to look at to repair roads and bridges and transportation. Everything is about transportation. I don't care what island you go to. And how are we going to manage that? Because when our visitors come, how are we going to move them on our island with aloha? How are we going to assure that they can get from one place to the other? And the TAT, of course, would help. But I'm saying with our leadership style, we have to acknowledge the issues before us, make tough decisions to look at other means, but at the same time advocate that we do receive this TAT coming to every county. And again, it's not like it's reaching out and assuring that we provide the best for the people that visit our state. And through this TAT funding, that will help all of our counties to provide the support for visitors and, of course, our residents. And again, securing the GET was a big task between us and the county council. But reaching out, talking, being able to make sure that we get the support from our business community, from our tourism community, all of us pulling together, I believe that it's going to happen. And we're going to be able to receive the funding coming down to our communities to assure that the experience for our visitors are at the forefront, and more importantly, our residents can also live in our beautiful state together and in harmony.
Thank you. Mr. Green, your question is to do with affordable housing. The median household income in Hawaii is just about $75,000. The median home price runs between $795,000 to $800,000 on the island of Oahu. Mr. Green, what would you do at the state level to encourage the development of affordable housing for middle-income earners who are often priced out of the market? You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. This is absolutely one of the most important questions and issues that can be asked, not just of candidates, but of all of our people in the state. Right now, it's impossible to be a middle-class individual and stay in Hawaii unless you have family property or you inherit wealth. So the key is, on many levels, we have to, number one, encourage our developers and builders to set aside the pure and only profit motive, which is challenging, I know, for them. But we should not be allowing people to go forward and develop these multimillion-dollar condominiums and then allow for speculation from overseas before we build an adequate supply. And we have that capacity. We haven't had the courage, but we have that capacity. We haven't had a governor to stand up to the developers and say, you know, we're partners here. So for every development that you build, which is going to benefit tourism or people who decide to speculate, we expect you to build a development or build a condominium complex, apartment complex, or housing tract that will also be somewhere in a much, much more affordable range. Because everyone is about, this is a large number of people in their state, is about two paychecks away from not even being able to afford anything. Survival in our state. Very few people have significant savings, and we're seeing a great exodus of our children. So that would be one thing. I would bring down the hammer on any development unless there was equal and a partnered development that provided housing in the $250,000 to $350,000 range, where you could get rentals for $1,200 to $1,500 a month. That would be a first starting point. But this is a much more complex issue. It's not just about having the inventory, which we have to have. We have to have the revolving housing trust funds and the lower rates so that people can borrow the money. They have to do the projects after all. But in addition to that, we have to raise wages. We have to raise real wages so that people who languish well below the $75,000 median can also begin to stay and grow into their 30s when their professions begin, take a partner, and then become a partnership when they buy their house. We should have debt-free college. Because if you take the debt away from someone carrying that $80,000, $100,000, $120,000 college debt, then they can also return to Hawaii because wages tend to be deflated against cost of living in our state. So it's really a multifactorial issue. We also need to raise the living wage because if we continue to have 362,000 of our citizens on Medicaid living right near poverty, there's always going to be a lot of tax dollars going into that, what is a $2 billion budget. Therefore, we can't afford to do so many of the other things that are necessary to build those houses, to get the adequate retention of top-skilled people to grow our economy. So housing is about education. It is about debt forgiveness. It is about inventory. But most importantly, it's about fairness. And when people are making 7, 8, and 9-figure profits on large developments, they should be honor-bound to build much smaller developments that will serve the people.
Thank you. Mr. Sparrow, your question is regarding agriculture. With pineapple and sugar production gone, the state of Hawaii is faced with tens of thousands of acres of fallow farmland. Would you promote a return to agriculture for Kauai and the state? If so, how? If not, why? You have 3 minutes.
Thank you for asking. I support diversified agriculture, and there have been many efforts to grow many crops, but none has hit the level that we had with pineapple or sugarcane. However, I believe that our next great golden crop can be hemp and cannabis. Okay. I've been a supporter of building a hemp industry. I've introduced legislation that we have had bills passed. And as a matter of fact, if you go to the Department of Agriculture Hawaii website, click down bottom right, you will see the rules for Hawaii's industrial pilot hemp program that is beginning right now. Thanks to the Federal Farm Act of 2014, states can do pilot programs. And we have a pilot program where you can apply. I believe it's $500. And if you get chosen, you could grow up to 10 acres of hemp. You can create and build a product. And most importantly, you can sell it. And we all know that hemp has 10,000 uses. And in particular in Hawaii, we should look at research and development in biofuels. Diesel fuels are made out of hemp. Hempcrete, on Maui, there's a home made out of hemp. Hempcrete. And what better way to make Aloha shirts than out of hemp? So hemp has great potential. It's used throughout the world. And only in the United States did we ban it in the 1940s, purely out of greed, purely out of greed. And that was the first fake news. And medical cannabis, I told you I was one of the key architects for medical cannabis. And this year my bill to allow medical cannabis to deal with opioid addictions and other substance abuses was passed this year. And we, Hawaii, can become and should become a leader in research and development for medical cannabis. And this can benefit tourism. I can see medical cannabis resorts, medical cannabis spas. And down the road, I do support the legalization, adult use of cannabis. It'll be driven, folks, by revenues. And the reason why I say this is because governing is so, so expensive. And we can't sustain ourselves on your income tax or your property tax or raising the hotel tax or the general excise tax. We need to find other revenue sources. And those revenue sources can be derived from cannabis. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Iwamoto, your question has to do with homelessness. According to statistics, Hawaii leads the nation in its rate of homelessness or houselessness. While recent counts indicate it has been a decline, the situation is still critical and affects upwards of 6,000 people on any given day in the state. This includes as much as 33% of that number being children. Your question is, what is your solution to end Hawaii's homeless crisis? You have 3 minutes.
Great, thank you. In 3 minutes, let's solve this. First of all, I think we need to, obviously we need to build affordable rentals and housing to allow homeless people to live in. We don't currently have enough housing stock. One of the reasons why is when we're so busy building luxury condominiums, luxury developments, they're basically competing People who want to build affordable or housing solutions for homeless people, they're competing for land, labor, and materials against people who have the profits and the profit margins of huge luxury developments. And they can never compete for the same pieces of land, because if it's a bidding war, who's going to put in the highest bid? It's going to be the luxury developer. Same goes for labor and other materials. So we need a moratorium on building luxury, a moratorium on permits, until we have all of the affordable housing and all of the housing units to put our homeless families in, and to get them off the streets, first of all. So I mentioned my apartment building. Again, one of the first families that I moved in had a subsidy. This gentleman was living in a van with his three kids for 3 years, but he had been working for the same employer for 7 years. Within a year of having stabilized housing and housing assistance, he was able to get a promotion and three raises. Within that year, he was no longer eligible for his subsidy. He is currently paying full rent, and it's affordable rent, but he's paying the full amount on his own. The kind of assistance that we offer these families, it is a hand up. And I think that's what a lot of them just need. They need an opportunity to get off the streets. So moratorium until everything's built, and then after that we can give the developers who worked on the homeless on the affordable housing projects, we can give them first in line status for their when they resume building luxury.
Thank you. This next question is Kauai specific, and just to remind everybody, they are randomly ordered and we didn't know who was going to sit where. But this question goes to Mr. Cavallo. It's regarding the state highway improvements. The area between Wailua and Kealia is notorious for traffic congestion. At just over 4 miles, this section of the main highway on Kauai can take upwards of 30 minutes to pass through. Your question, Mr. Cavallo, is how would you promote and expedite state highway improvements for Kuhio Highway, specifically from Wailua to Kealia? You have 3 minutes.
Well, obviously, transportation is a big issue statewide. And we've been able to really work closely with all our different partners here. We have our east side multimodal plan in place. It all talks about the plan that, you know, we need to implement. And developing the relationships with the Kealia Department of Transportation and all that. There is a plan in place right now of extending our bypass road with an additional lane. And that, again, took time and effort. Working with the Department of Education, but at a state level, we'd have to take that to that higher level. For this particular corridor area, part of the plan was to develop this transportation shuttle service that could help people. See, on Kauai, and I'm sure in different parts of our island, you have to be creative. And part of the plan was to create this transit hub. We talked about it on the South Shore, but in this particular area, is how do we move people via shuttle service that can actually take them into the town area and then, of course, out to the North Shore. So that was one of the other parts of the plan. So part of the plan is to look into that, as well as roundabouts and peanut abouts and different times of incorporating complete streets kind of thinking into the road maintenance program. We also have different roadways coming down and connecting feeder roads that will tie into the bypass road area that would make it more accessible to the people. Again, our efforts to reach out to secure this transportation grant, which we did, a TIGA grant, that secured $13 million from the federal government, and bringing that home to transform our island into this walkable, bikeable, complete streets kind of thinking. And we need to incorporate that kind of thinking into the future and how we're going to move people on our island. So we need to continue to connect with the federal government to assure that we reap all the benefits of funding there. We need to look and finish up our multimodal plan here on Kauai and throughout the state. We need to assure that the right funding is in place so we can continue to plan and manage abroad. But more importantly, what fits for each island, and I say for here, is that shuttle service kind of thinking as we connect our communities, not only in this quarter, but right here in the Lihue area, and taking that footprint to the larger state level, I think will help all of us look at different opportunities to secure the funding that is needed in transportation and the future of transportation.
Thank you. Mr. Green, what steps, if elected, would you take as Lieutenant Governor to ensure that the Outer Islands have input and support with your office? You have 3 minutes.
Well, I feel lucky to have received that question, being a neighbor island legislator. So it is a challenge. It's an incredible challenge to continuously incorporate the voices of we neighbor islanders, and that includes all of us in this room. In the last 14 years that I've served, four in the House and 10 in the Senate, I've made 800 round trips between Big Island and Oahu just to make sure I could get the job done for our people. And by going back and listening to people, that's the way you really represent. The most important thing is to hear people in person. There's no question that the Lieutenant Governor's office can enable a lot of communication. We already are a little bit short and behind on allowing people to telecommunicate, to have video conferencing into the hearings and into the rooms. But it's really never the same. It's never the same, in my opinion, as getting out right in front of people. I like to be with people when I'm having a heart-to-heart conversation about what matters to them. So Lieutenant Governor has that capacity, and I will always be a neighbor island person. When I was transplanted from the east into Kau and was, I guess, lucky to meet my family here and stay, I really got to know how distant we are often from government on the neighbor islands. And I know it drives us crazy when people say the outer island or they say something dismissive about us because we aren't there in the kind of the heat of the moment at the Capitol. So having a neighbor island candidate, I think, is actually quite a good idea. This is not an endorsement right now of the good mayor, though I am fond of him. But I do think that that is an advantage. And it's not just bringing people, bringing the message out to the people, but also bringing them over to the Capitol. And Kim has made a lot of good comments, and I've respected them, about opening the Lieutenant Governor's office for the people. And that is obviously a sensible approach to do it. I'm of the generation where communicating in real time constantly is easy. It's what I do. I've got an 11-year-old and a 7-year-old who are passing me very quickly with their devices and their capacity to communicate. But I fancy myself someone who goes into the trenches, and that's why I always go back and do medical missions in the neighbor islands or work in the hospitals. And I think that that can be a metaphor for how we would all govern as lieutenant governors if we're going to be good at it. I know now that the governor is going to be, for the next term or two, from Oahu, so it's incumbent upon us to have some voice from the neighbor islands, whether it's people from the cabinet or one of the elected individuals that would get to serve.
Thank you. Mr. Sparrow, your question has to do with domestic violence. One in two women and one in five men in the United States... Will do. One in two women and one in five men in the United States have experienced some form of sexual violence. One in three women and one in four men in America experience violence from their partners in their lifetime. Up to 50,000 women between the age of 18 and 64 are victims of domestic violence each year in Hawaii. Your question is, what would you do to address the pervasive domestic violence crisis in the state? You have 3 minutes.
If you remember a few years ago, the Cachola tapes, where the police officer was caught on video chasing his girlfriend around. And the police department was criticized for the way they handled it. They basically handled it so poorly that nothing happened to this officer, which many of us believe was really assaulting his girlfriend. I was the chairman of the Public Safety Intergovernmental and Military Affairs Committee, and we had Chief Ke Aloha and all of his deputies come before the Senate and discuss the issue of how the police handle domestic violence. And we came away with that meeting basically saying, you folks have done a very bad job. You need to do a much better job. You need a better job of training your officers and making certain that they are handling these cases properly. Because if the police cannot handle these cases the right way, most people won't call in. They'll lose trust and faith. And you'll have the problems like we're seeing today, whether it's, you know, in Hollywood, in the workplace, sports, where women are degraded and disrespected and not treated the way they should be treated. And as Lieutenant Governor, I will make it a cause to make certain that there is fairness and equality for all. And that especially women, since we all have mothers, daughters, nieces, granddaughters, you know, we need to make certain that the laws and rules protect everyone, that they're implemented properly, and if they are not, you as a government official, you as a police officer, you as whoever is in the position will be held accountable. And we must not tolerate, whether we should spread the word through social media, in the workplace, through unions, business, that Hawaii will not tolerate any form of domestic violence, any place of workforce violence, any place where people hurt, injure, and disrespect others. That we are an island state of aloha, and we all understand what aloha means. Also going back to what we found with the police is that with the rape kits, if you remember in the news, they were not testing the rape kits. That was horrendous. I was sitting on the Judiciary Committee when the police officer stated that, and we were up in arms. So the way society, and a society that we will do our best, and I will do my best to make certain that domestic violence is ended or eliminated. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Iwamoto, your question has to do with diversity, diversifying the economy. With the demise of a plantation agriculture coupled with the limited potential of further growth in tourism, economic diversification has become a topic of increasing interest in Hawaii for economic development and efforts for promoting economic growth and maintaining stability. Your question is, please describe your specific plans to diversify the economy and spur economic development in the state.
Thank you. First of all, when you think about all of the crippling student debt that our college graduates enter their careers with, it leads them into taking very safe paths into pre-existing industries. And so I think the first issue is to make sure that we have debt-free college, which means the students, the graduates, don't start with all that debt. They're allowed to take more chances and start more small businesses. And then as a business owner, I know for a fact that one of the issues, one of the most deterrent forces on small businesses or starting a small business is the price of your shop or your store, your any kind of real estate you have to purchase or rent. That's the most, when you look at pie charts of businesses, when you're thinking about buying a business and you're saying, how is a business in Hawaii doing in terms of allocation of expenses? And you compare that to what the national average is. The section of pie for real estate and leases and costs for physical space is much larger in Hawaii than the national average. So when we... And actually, by chance, labor is actually surprisingly much narrower than the national average. And it's because we're underpaying a lot of the workers, and we're overpaying landlords with the real estate market going the way it is. 27% of all land in Hawaii is owned by non-residents. So there's this whole commodification of land that's causing the prices to go up, which actually then affects, I know there's a question about affordable housing. It affects affordable housing for median income families. When you're competing with the world who's trying to buy a piece of real estate in a place where we have one of the lowest property taxes, and I know that's really hard to hear, but it's true. And I'm not indicating that we should raise property taxes without also raising the personal exemption, so that we are capturing higher property taxes from non-resident landholders. That's a huge piece of revenue. So if we're able to control some of the land costs, which as when you're entering a new business or starting a new business, that's going to be a really important aspect. Obviously, we need to work more on technology and creating opportunities where you don't have to carry that overhead, which begins with education. As you know, I served on the Board of Education for 5 years, and having career pathways that are that meet the interests of the students, whether that's media arts or just arts in general. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question has to do with our state parks for Mr. Cavallo. Hawaii's reputation is for unsurpassed beauty, and it's reflected in our parks. Hawaii's park system is composed of 50 state parks encompassing approximately 30,000 acres on the 5 major islands. These parks offer a variety of outdoor recreation and heritage opportunities. With the increase of park use by locals and tourists, there is a growing challenge to keep the facilities safe and clean. Mr. Cavallo, your question is, how would you improve our state parks and keep our beaches clean and safe? You have 3 minutes.
Well, one way to remove the cap or the TAT, that would help. but, of course, having been a past park director, parks and recreation, parks in general, is a big part of our state, and people come from all over the world wanting to enjoy our beautiful state. And how do we continue to maintain and assure that their experience here is memorable and keeps them moving forward? And as Lieutenant Governor, I would definitely put all our resources together and look at our entire footprint statewide on parks, from restroom facilities to parking lots to maintenance of our pavilion areas, and looking at designating maybe different park areas for national park designations, and all of that that ties into the bigger picture for this entire state. Park maintenance is a big, big issue and concern for me. Again, the maintenance part of it, but also the economic development part of it. And how do we better manage our park system? How do we encourage that there is enough campsites for our visitors, for our residents first, of course, and our visitors who come? How do we maintain our trails? How do we understand the need to assure that it's safe to go and spend the night at whatever parks we have throughout the state? Better management, more resources, remove the TAT, looking at all the resources that could be placed into this way of managing parks statewide. I would assemble the entire statewide team, collectively look at all the different resources that are available, come up with a statewide plan, and look at resources from abroad as well. Because I believe that once we can really come up with a solid plan that it can address all of our parks throughout the state, then and only then will our visitors have that opportunity. It also encompasses lifeguard services as well, because a lot of our beach parks are also part of this plan. And we need to do a better job at offering safety and ocean rescue and ocean safety opportunities at the beach park sites too. It also involves towers and equipment and supplies. All of it ties into the health and safety, not only of the picnicking part, but the getting into the water part. And that all ties into the park system. So as Lieutenant Governor, I will take my experience at the bigger level, do a better assessment of our entire park system, and look at the resources that is needed to maintain and upkeep our parks throughout the state.
Thank you. Mr. Green, your question has to do with the Airport Authority. Airlines and other tourism stakeholders have been calling for the establishment of an airport authority to oversee Hawaii's 15 airports. For the second year in a row, the proposal to establish an autonomous corporation to take control of Hawaii's airports has failed to pass. Mr. Green, do you support the formation of an airport authority to oversee the statewide airport system? If not, why?
Yes, I do. I appreciate that question because obviously some of the lifeblood of our community is how many tourists can come, how many of our friends and families we can invite here to be a part of our lives. We don't do a good job. We haven't modernized our airports adequately. They do pale in comparison as far as technology goes to what's on the mainland. So there's no question that we should have some independent authorities. I think we should have a sporting authority as well. I think that there's been too much concentrated power at the legislature. I would deconstruct some of that power. I've always felt that way because when you have micromanaging legislators, it really is a disaster, frankly. They're constantly bound by special interests, and it only takes one chairperson to destroy a good idea. It's very disconcerting when really we could get down to action. There are a lot of contracts that have been not put up for bid for many, many years, which is obviously raising some red flags for me. And individuals that continue to profit from contracts, they don't have an incentive to change. They don't have an incentive to bring newer ideas, bring better services. So my position is pretty strong that we should have an airport authority. I'm going to address a couple other points before my time runs out because I think they speak to the relevance of what you're going to get as a lieutenant governor from me. For one, a question was asked about domestic violence. So I've actually broken open rape kits. I don't know why the gentleman's shaking his head, but I have. I've taken care of many individuals that have been sexually assaulted. And when I saw that hospitals weren't taking care of rape victims, I stood up and passed a law with colleagues, but I wrote and passed it so that any woman at any hospital could get that care. And that's the kind of thing that I can take from experience and translate into action. On economic growth, the truth behind economic growth for our state is that we expand our educational opportunities, because the moment we reinvent education and give new opportunities for 10th, 11th, and 12th graders to go into trades, they will have a higher standard of living, their real wages will increase, it improves our economy, they then can afford to send their children on to other professions or can expand a family and afford housing. So these questions are all very relevant and have been all excellent, but we should really speak to the core of a lot of these issues. A core issue for the airports, more autonomy. A core issue for our women, actual care. These are the kind of things I fight for. But I want you to remember, when you go and vote, good people are among us, but you need, I believe, people who have had actual experience, because we can't just continue to guess at what politicians will do in the next 5 and 10 years. We'll never get to problems and their solutions. And that's the difference between me and my colleagues.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola.
Mr. Spiro, your question has to do with renewable energy. In a recent speech to Kauai businesses, Governor Ige reported that Hawaii is leading the nation in its efforts to convert to renewable energy. The governor commented that on Kauai, KIUC leads the state in generating as much as 80 to 90% renewable energy in prime conditions. Your question is, how do you propose the state achieve its renewable energy goals, which aims to have us use 100% renewable energy by 2045?
We should look to Kauai and see why you have been successful. That's a very easy one. There are so many best practices in Hawaii, nationally, in the world. And certainly, Hawaii, with all of our natural resources, should be able to hit our goal of 100%, give or take a few percentage points in the coming years. And I'm a firm, strong believer in solar. Solar, we have been a leader nationally. And if there's one thing we have abundance of, it's the sun. So we need to take the resources that are available to us every day and see what we can do in terms of research and development. We need to put money in battery storage. That's the big issue now in terms of how we can maximize solar. But certainly at the legislature, we understand, especially being on an island state, that we need to become self-sustaining. We're exporting billions and billions of dollars each year on fossil fuels. Imagine if we were creating that energy here and those billions of dollars were here. That's what's at stake. And this can give us economic freedom and a form of economic justice if we could deal with the alternative issues. And we have also windmills, we have wave, we have geothermal. There are so many options. The state needs to make it a priority. We have made it a priority, and we will continue to make it a priority because, again, this is one of the cost drivers for many of our families living on a day-to-day basis. And we all consume energy. And this is an area where we must put the resources, whether it's in government agencies, through the university system, let's utilize the university system, and then develop public-private partnerships with companies that want to do research and development in our state. And that's how we achieve our goals. And the military as well. The military is a big player. And with the strongest military in our backyard, we need to work with them as well on this matter. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Iwamoto, your question has to do with disaster readiness. On Kauai, we've seen many situations where natural disasters create the need for efficient crisis management. Most recently here on Kauai, we suffered extensive flooding damage on the north and south shores. On Hawaii Island, Pele continues to cover the island's landscape with lava and displace its residents. What steps would you take as Lieutenant Governor to ensure our state is more disaster ready? You have 3 minutes.
Well, I think we need to invest in best practices regarding how to deal with flooding, but also thinking about, for instance, the flooding that happened in Hanalei and actually parts of Oahu. A lot of it had to do with the way we intervened or we interfered with the natural movement of nature. I mean, right there was, I think, from what I read about what happened in Hanalei, for instance, there was some creating of berms to graze buffalo on, which then caused the water to rush in a different path than what it might have slowly moved differently in terms of some of the homes that were destroyed on the beach. And further in from the shore. So I think making sure that we're making wise planning choices. But then in terms of once disaster hits, how do we address it? I think definitely we need to invest in best practices, but we also need to look at the community themselves and how they want to address how do they want to see the fix being implemented? And also allocating some of the resources locally to the people in that community. Like I know in Hanalei, there were a lot of able people who couldn't go to their normal jobs, but they could have received some kind of stipend or monetary to actually working and doing the work. But instead, they were forced to stand by or just volunteer to, and when they could have actually been working and being of use and earning an income to address some of the problems. So I think that would be a really important aspect as well. But I want to use this opportunity to talk about something that was mentioned earlier about the road traffic. So I was sign waving out in front of KCC, and I saw so many tourists driving during rush hour. I'm like, we were counting, and I think one out of every two cars was our rental car. And that is half, I mean, like, I don't know if we need that many tourists driving on the road during those peak times. And is there a way to put a certain kind of sensor on rental cars that get a certain, that tourists are told that if you drive on these streets at this time, you will incur a higher, you'll be charged a toll, a really expensive toll. I think that would be one way of dealing with it. And also bifurcating the TAT so that there's clearly a state TAT and a county TAT. And the counties could regulate the flow of tourism based on increasing that TAT. When they feel they want more tourists, they can lower their TAT. And when they want less, they can actually increase the TAT and capture revenue.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes the time we have for questions for our Lieutenant Governor candidates. We'll now start with closing remarks. Each of the candidates will have 3 minutes, and we'll start with Mr. Cavaglio.
Again, I want to really thank the Chamber for all the work that you do. There's a lot of great things happening on our island of Kauai, tourism, agriculture, culture. We're transforming our island into walkable, bikeable, complete streets kind of thinking, green energy. All of it. There's so many examples on the smaller foot. Even our whole commitment to renewable energy overall, from clean energy and looking at transforming all of our street lights to LED lighting, food sustainability, coming out with an agricultural park out in Kilauea, and introducing a school, farm to school program, and having the community grow what they want. Green jobs, green education, securing a grant from HLTA of $50,000 to bring back the Future Farmer Program within the high schools. You know, it's important we continue to grow the farmers, our farmers of tomorrow, including science and technology. Natural resource management, a Kauai Nui Kupapa program. The signage along the highways depicts the moku, the land division. It depicts the fish, the plant, the color. Important. All of our efforts in renewable energy, all of our efforts in waste reduction. We're the first island to be a pay-as-you-throw program, reduce, reuse, recycle. We're going to be in the Disneyland of waste. We're going to build it because it's going to be an aggressive diversion program. And finally, smart growth principles. We're transforming an island to walkable, bikeable, complete streets, safe routes to school kind of island, connected community, offering choices for a kupuna or keiki to walk and bike and get out and about. That's important to me. We secured a $13.8 million Tiger grant, aggressive grant from the federal level, brought it back home, no place else in the country. So my point is we're rocking and rolling. We're moving here in Kauai. We're setting the footprint, thinking big. We're setting the footprint in so many different areas that we can take it to the next level. I believe we have that experience. I believe I have that experience, that administrative experience, to look at things, bring the people in, understand who to surround myself with, good hearts and souls, getting the resources, understanding where the pots of funding are, knowing how to challenge ourselves to get that funding home to Kauai, to get that funding back to Hawaii, from the relationships that we build at all levels. I feel confident that with that experience and that understanding and that foresight and that vision, it's important that the Lieutenant Governor have that opportunity to serve the entire state with that kind of understanding, bring the people in, and empowering people to know that they can come into the Lieutenant Governor's office and be served. And I look forward. So when you get into the voting booth, think big.
Thank you. Mr. Green, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you again for spending time with us tonight and welcoming me into your community. It's been an incredible honor to serve for the last several years as a state rep and a state senator. I came humbly as a doc to a rural area and expected just to serve in the National Health Corps, and I didn't know what would happen. When I saw the opportunity to do more for the community and ran and was successful, the lucky break of the century happened for me, which was about 5 days after I got into my office in Honolulu. I met my wife, Jamie. 2 years later, we had our daughter, Maya, and I developed roots and family here, and now we have Sam. And so it's given me an additional perspective, in addition to the perspective of what we need as people for our communities, what we need in government. We need fresh leadership, if I can be just very direct and honest. I think that's not lost on any of us. We have not seen fresh leadership in a very long time, and we haven't seen direct action in a very long time. We go through these cycles, and we hear a lot of excellent rhetoric, but we don't see actual implementation. When I saw that women couldn't get mammograms, I passed a bill so that women could get mammograms even if they didn't have a primary care provider at the time. When I saw children were uninsured or their parents couldn't afford medications, I passed Keiki Care so we could get all of our kids covered. When I saw women that had been sexually assaulted didn't get care in hospitals, that had to be corrected. Our children didn't get covered for their autism care. I saw that. We passed that. Pesticides were plaguing our communities, and action was not being taken. We now have pesticide legislation. I fought back Monsanto to make sure that we would have buffer zones. So to finally get real action is relevant to our communities and relevant to society. And if you send me to become your lieutenant governor, I'll be able to extend that honor, because now we have the opioid crisis to face. We have the homeless epidemic to share the responsibility in a civilized, humane way, and to solve the problem, which I've already begun to do with my private sector communications and relationships. This is the way I approach things. And I just don't think we can wait another 4, 8, 12 years to get to the root of these problems. I don't wear it as a badge of honor to go to higher office. I see it, serving as lieutenant governor, as an immediate opportunity to apply the skills that I have. And if you feel those skills are relevant, I humbly ask for your vote. Because when my family and I can take up these problems, you see immediate results that impacts each and every one of us across the state. I really love being with you. I'm walking door to door across the whole state. I'm seeing people from every walk of life. It is an extraordinary experience, one that is humbling and informs what we really need in the lieutenant governor. And that's what I'll do for you. I will serve humbly. I will take on these largest challenges against special interests, and I will use the experience that I've been lucky enough to get as a physician and a legislator to make things better for all of our families. So once again, thank you so much for welcoming me into your community.
Thank you. Mr. Sparrow, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Our state has become a state of haves and have-nots. People are struggling on a daily basis, and I want to help make their lives better. I have 27 years in state and county government, and I believe I have the experience and background needed to serve in the executive offices. My background also includes over 10 years in the private sector and over 25 years of community service. We need to create a Hawaii where everyone has a home and a warm bed, where they have access to transportation, where they have health care for all, where we have the best education in the world, and where our neighborhoods are safe and secure. Those basic items is what I want to work with and have a job for every man and woman that wants a job. Because this is about the future of our state. Is it going to continue being an expensive utopia for the rich and wealthy? I've heard discussions where future generations may not have it as good as our generations. That's where Hawaii is going today. And I believe we can change that with leadership that gets the job done. That's my track record in the legislature. With someone who speaks out, I was the first elected official that said, Chief, you need to step down from that HPD position because of this federal investigation. I asked DOT, do you really need your own airport police? And I've asked principals about the curriculum of students and are they getting the education they need. I humbly ask you to visit Win With Will, winwithwill.com, and see what I've done, see what I want to do, and I believe all of us working together can truly, truly make Hawaii a better place and change this paradise from being this enclave for the wealthy and rich to one where the working people of our state don't have to think about moving to Las Vegas, and that we know our children will have a future in our beautiful Hawaii. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Iomoto, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you very much for all of this time and for your interest in understanding and figuring out which lieutenant governor candidate you want to support. My name is Kim Koko Iwamoto, and I do ask for your support. We heard some of the other candidates talk about fresh leadership, but at the same time, we also heard them tout their records in leadership, right? And that's where I'm challenged, because one of the reasons why I want to run is, obviously, as you hear their records of service, I don't have that formal leadership position under my belt. But what I do have is immense frustration that I feel like I share with so many of us. Like, with all of these great minds, why do we see huge amounts of traffic? Why are we seeing families continue to leave Hawaii because they can't afford to live here? Why is our homelessness rate the worst in the nation? Why are there so many families living paycheck to paycheck? There was a time, maybe 50 years ago, where two elementary school teachers working for the DOE could actually buy a home together, right? That was just 50 years ago. Where we've come since then, that the journey of the struggle that we've normalized is not acceptable. And that's when I looked at who was running for lieutenant governor, I said, you know, I think we could do better. You know, I think we need to do better, and we need to stand up, and we need to radicalize a little bit and call the system out, challenge the corporations that profit off the hardship that we're experiencing. You know, I mentioned about how many out of state residents own land here. They're still getting, so they're, you know, I don't know if you've been around Honolulu a lot, but there are giant public storage air conditioned buildings all over the urban core. Those investors, many of them are from the mainland, and they are getting tax credits and tax deductions on their profits. They don't even live here. Meanwhile, those public storage buildings used to be affordable housing. Who's making these decisions? Who's allowing these decisions to be made? And who's protecting these the wealthy land investors on the mainland? And why shouldn't we be looking out for the residents of Hawaii and our environment? So I've been working on environmental issues, and that I'm really concerned about, you know, rapid development and the use of pesticide spraying and the way it's harming our ecosystem. We need more accountability, and we need people willing to stand up to them and who haven't been received huge contributions throughout their political careers. So I'm really standing here as a different option for people, for that fresh option that you heard mentioned earlier. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. That concludes our questions and our closing statements. Mahalo to all of the candidates. Bernard Cavalio Jr., Willis Sparrow, Josh Green, and Kim Koko Iwamoto. Please remember to vote. The primary elections are on August the 11th and the general election on November the 6th. Polls are open from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. And thank you again to our sponsors, Family and Friends of Agriculture, HTLA, Kauai Chapter, the Kauai Board of Realtors, Kauai Filipino Chamber of Commerce, YWCA, the Outrigger Kehuna Plantation, PAC Build, and our media partners, KKCR and Hoike Community Television. Thank you very much. Good night.
Thank you.